Accession number 9424, Reel 3.
Mr. Cooper, Reel 3. What arrangements were made for you at this house and barn that you were put up?
Well, there were really no arrangements. We just had to stay there the night, and we went into the orchard to lie down. And it was there that we saw the first signs of, a battle, really, because from where we were, we saw different lights and SOSs going up from the German lines. We could hear machine guns, and also the distant fire of the German guns behind. And on our left in a wood were several British 6-inch guns, and firing with terrific clamour about every 5 minutes to right onto the German front from there. And Corporal said to us, "Now," he said, you can almost say you're in the front line now. You might be in action tonight if there's any further advance by the Germans."
How far were you behind the front lines at that time?
I suppose 2 or 3 miles, I suppose. Anyway, we saw all the confusion, hectic confusion of war, even from there. But it died down during the night. And when we were getting really cold lying on the grass, well, a truck arrived with blankets, and each man was issued with one blanket. I shared with another chap. We always had our ground sheets, so we put our ground sheets down, and we had two blankets over us. Slept fitfully during the night. And when dawn came, everything seemed to have quietened down. We didn't hear a sound.
Were you actually shelled in your area?
No shells at all. It was just 2 or 3 miles away where all the activity was going on. And the NCO said, "Oh, there's something really happening there. He must be over." When they said he must be over, that means to say he's over the top and attacking.
The following morning, what did you do?
Well, everybody just started washing at a well and cleaning themselves up. And you'd have thought nothing had happened in the night. And then about noon that day, all the battalion was formed up, and we marched over fields and tracks and roads till we reached Sensler Valley. And that was the small hamlet where we were to come out on rest for the next few months.
Could you describe what Sensler Valley was like?
It's a little tree-lined lane of willow trees with a brook running on one side and dotted around with little cottages with their barns and orchards, etc. I should think there weren't more than about 15 houses there altogether.
Had it been at all damaged by
Not at all, not at all. In fact, Sensler Valley, from the April to the August that we were there, there was not a shell landed in Sensler Valley. Although we had, at the rear of this small hamlet, we had our 6-inch guns, and further back some 9.2 guns, which was really heavy stuff they used to fire at night.
Were the local population still at Sensler
Valley? Oh, no, they were leaving when we arrived there that night. But there were one or two civilians left, and there were two old ladies who gave us coffee and said, "Germany, no, what did they call it? Alleman, that was the name. Alleman, no bon. And we felt quite heroic. Anyway, they all packed off, and by the next day, that little hamlet and anything else was abandoned.
So that became your rest camp from
well, rest village. We used to call it the rest village, really. And
Were you allotted any particular place to go in Sensler Valley when you
No, while we were there, we had to go on on different guards to the crossroads leading up to the line to make sure that no civilians went up or came down from the line, refugees. And we slept in a house just on some crossroads. And while we were there one night, I was outside on guard. We were on, someone on guard the whole night outside on the road. Where I suddenly heard this sound of shells that, instead of having a roar, just had a sort of peculiar hissing sound, and then a plop. Of course, that was gas shells. So I went into the barn and told everybody, gas, gas, you see. But I think we hardly smelt it at that time. Perhaps the wind wasn't in the right direction. And then we went back to Sensler Valley until the night came when we went up the line.
How long did you stay at Sensler Valley?
Probably 2 or 3 days.
2 or 3 days.
If that. 2 days, I should think.
Was there anything else you did there apart from guard duties at night?
No. No, we weren't put on any duties.
What sort of things did you do during the day?
Talked. Messed around, sat in the barn, sat in the orchard. That's all.
Were you giving any sort of preparation for going up to the line? Any sort of
advice? Well, we had to, yes, when the time came, we had to hand in any blankets and all that sort of thing, and they were stacked up to go down to the transport lines where we were in. And I saw some peculiar sort of tin things on rods with circles on a red, green, green, you see. And I said, of course, what are those? He said, oh, those are SOS flares. So you just put that long rod down a rifle and fired them up in the air. And when they got up to 200 or 300 feet, well, the can burst open and the parachute was blown out, and these flares were automatically lit, and they just drifted down very slowly. And that was the call for artillery fire. If you were in the line and there was a German attack, shot those up, and then the artillery at the back of Mount Burnish and behind the canal would see it, and they'd open up a barrage on the German lines, because there was an attack coming.
Who were issued with those flares?
Each company.
They were given to the officers, would they?
Would be given to the officers, yes, to say when they had to be fired up.
I see. Was there any sort of last-minute speeches or attempts to raise morale before you went into line?
No, the only thing was when we marched out onto the road and we halted, and Lieutenant Dobson just said, well, you're up in the line, boys, and there may be an attack or something doing. And he said there may be one or two decorations on hand. So he said, just do your best. That was all. And then we marched on about quite a long space between each company in case there was any shell fire, so that the whole lot wouldn't be wiped out at once. And then...
As you marched up to the line,
up to the line,
could you describe the terrain you were marching through?
Just flat, empty, hardly any. We marched through Gonyham, and then there was nothing after Gonyham, as regards to one or two scattered houses, until we suddenly, the company halted, and the corporal said, halt, you see. And he said, well, you're in the front line. And that was surprising, because there wasn't any sign of damage. There were just trees and gardens and orchards in this by Ries de Vinage. That was only a scattering of houses among trees and barns, etc. And then we just...
How far was Ries de Vinage away from Sensler Valley? A
couple of miles, 3 miles. See, Ries de Vinage, that's... The Germans had just... on their sweep forward, and the Portuguese, by the way, had just broken up and panicked during this German advance, which had started about April the 9th. And our division, that was one of the main reasons our division had been rushed up to fill the gap.
Did you know that at the time, or did you learn about that
no,
later on?
No, knew that later. Of course, we used to call the Portuguese the pork and beans.
So
the and then there was, it was after he said you were in the front line that we suddenly a machine gun that seemed to be yards away swept over the whole area and we all fell flat. And then the corporal said that someone had started a little trench about this big and he said, well, go on, dig this as deep as you can, you see, and we were behind a hedge.
I see. What time of day would this be now?
This would be about 9 o'clock at night, dark.
Did you always move at night?
Oh, yes. Anywhere near the line, always moves at night, yes.
When you were there, could you describe what the line was like? You mentioned there was a shallow trench and a hedge in front of you. Were there any other things you could see at that time that was immediately around you?
Hedges, a little house fairly near, a little cottage, and just bare flat land. That's all I could say.
What was the trench like itself? Was it a proper trench?
It was just a mud ditch. They'd only started, the Somersets, when we were relieved, had only started digging it a few hours before. There was no trench system at all. It was just, they called them posts, just dotted along about 50 feet apart in an irregular line.
And so once you reached your post, were you in there with someone else or were there on your own?
Oh, yes, there was my section of fire. Your company was divided into sections. I was in a section about, I think there were four or five of us.
And what did you do in that?
Started digging as quick as we could. But we didn't get down very far, and by the time we got down this far, it was all water.
What, about two feet down?
Yes. And then there was this machine gun firing all the time. No shell fire until then. After dawn broke, Corporal Taylor came. I don't know, and he came with Tommy Cooker, Yorkshire Flame, and he said, well, we'll have a brew up, which rather surprised me. He said, we'll have some Sergeant Major's tea, and we got the mess tin over this flame and boiler, put the tea and sugar in, which had come up with, how they got the rations up, I don't know, but the ration party had been up and delivered rations for the next day.
You say how they got the ration party up, you don't know. Was that because the machine gun fire had been so heavy?
I'm sorry, I'm a bit ahead of time. It was the following night that the ration party came out.
Oh, I see.
Not the night we actually settled down there. Because that was where, the following night was when there was the big bombardment and barrage, you see.
Okay. Well, perhaps if we could just stay with you in the trench that morning with Corporal Tedder making the tea. Could you describe that day, that first day in the trenches?
Well, in the afternoon, we suddenly heard this puffing sort of noise, and Hall next to me said, oh, he started with his trench mortars. And these things landed, well, not more than 50 yards, of a terrific explosion, and also among the little houses in the village. And that went on, and we had the whizzing fragments were coming over, so we kept pretty low. And then there was a bit of shell fire. And
how long did the trench mortar bombardment go on for?
Only about 20 minutes, which was enough.
Yes, you say it was enough. What was your reaction? This is the first time you'd actually been
under
the shell fire.
Yes, we were quite afraid of those because they were terrific explosions. And you didn't know, of course, the next one you heard it go, well, it was going to come down right with you. Fortunately, it didn't, but some of them must have been killed by them. And then the day went on, night came that night, and then that was the time when about early hours of the morning, terrific bombardment all over, mainly at the back on the support line. You see, we were in the front line, and on our right and left we had rifle fire crackling like giant bonfires. You couldn't, not individual shots. Okay. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, well, we saw our artillery, field artillery from behind, that started on the German lines. Then it was because we sent the saw the SOS hanging in the air, and then of course that provoked a more German bombardment. And then around about, I suppose, 6 o'clock in the morning, after all that firing and thunderous noise, it suddenly went quiet. I didn't mention, by the way, that the officer came round and all this bombardment and said, "Fire to your front, rapid fire." And we fired with a kick of the rifle about every, well, I don't know, I think I fired about every 2 minutes. As I imagined Germans might be coming towards us, I fired about sort of chest high, you see, all of that, and the others did
because
too.
Because you couldn't actually see anything.
Couldn't see anything. And then by the time daylight came, everything had gone quiet. Then the officer came and said, "Prepare to retire." I thought, "Why haven't you retired now?" I thought it was all over. And then we saw two Germans come with a stretcher with one of our chaps on it. And then we saw some Germans on the right, which we fired at, running. And he said, "We've been surrounded." And he
were
said,
the Germans carrying the British soldiers? Were they British prisoners, or were they?
A couple of the captured at some time, and they made them carry this chap down. And then the officer said, "Well, I think it was Lieutenant Dobson again." Said, "Well, run down the hedge and make for that house." And we got to this small house, and it was full of our troops, packed with them, all waiting there. I think they were waiting to give themselves up. Anyway,
you think they were waiting to give themselves up. What made you think that?
Well, because they had heard that we were surrounded, you see. And we thought, anyway, and the officers in the house said, "Well, come on, lads." He said, "I can't do much for you now, but anyone that wants to follow me." And he and the sergeant ran out and across the road, and then we heard German snipers firing, and you could see the bullets pitting up on the road. And then we jumped into shell holes, and another shell hole. Then we saw the captain of our company throw up his hands and fall down, killed. And by progressing shell, then we got to the final shell hole, where a sergeant lying dead outside it, and two wounded in it. They were machine gunners, not infantry, machine gun corps. And I flopped down, hadn't had any sleep, you see, for over a day and a night. And I lay down on the side one and said, "Come on, mate." He said, "If you lie out there, you'll get killed." So I rolled down into the trench. And there was a little house on the right, which was, the Germans were shattering all the roof with constant machine gun fire. I don't know what happened to the chaps that were waiting in that house, whether they were probably captured in the end. And then I fell asleep.
Yes, just go back to that account of the people in the house. The Germans were in the same village that house was part of, I take it.
Well, they'd come through. You see, I was in B. They'd come round on each side.
I see that the Germans had surrounded your part of the line, yes.
Our part of the line, yes. Mm-hmm. And
you were saying that you'd fallen asleep in the shell hole.
I'd fallen asleep around about, I suppose, 8 or 9 in the morning. When I woke up, it was pitch dark. There were no machine gunners in the place. The dead sergeant was still lying on the edge, and there was just me and another chap there of the King's Own. And we heard a voice say, "Any A company there? Any A company?" This was quite, getting on for midnight. And we thought, well, if we say we're A company, we'll get dragged out. So we kept quiet for a bit, you see. And then we said, then the any KOs there? That was King's Own. He said, "Oh, we're KOs, B company." He said, "Well, come on, join us." It was an officer. He said, "We're going to make a counterattack." So he gathered about, I don't know how many men, it was pitch dark together. He said, "Now," he said, "there's going to the artillery are going to put a barrage on where they think the Germans have got to at midnight." He said, and 5 minutes later, he said, we'll go forward. Then, of course, all the all the guns rattled out and shells swishing over our heads. He said, "Come on, lads, give them hell." And we walked along on our stomachs, and then we got up and rushed forward, really not knowing what we were going. And we were on a German machine gun post in no time, and this chap was with his machine gun ready to fire it, and then suddenly threw up his hands, said, "Mercy, Cameron," and screamed like pigs. "Mercy, Cameron, mercy, mercy." And we prodded them with our bayonets, about five in this particular post, and we hauled them out, and the other troops had got five or six more from under bundles of straw, etc., and sent them down. There was some NCO and some men were going to take them down to the line as prisoners. And then we were just set out along the line of hedge on guard in case there should be any further advance. And all I said, we saw about five or six Germans in the half light coming towards us, and we shouted out, "Who goes there?" And they just turned tail and ran, and we just fired out after them.
Why didn't you fire first? Were you not sure they were Germans? Or?
Not sure, you see, I just figured, you see. This is about 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. And then suddenly a corporal came to him and said, "Come on, out of it, you're being relieved." He said, Essex Regiment are relieving us. I thought, "Good heavens, we've only been in the line 3 days, being relieved." But apparently they knew that most of our people had either been killed or taken prisoners. And we, within 5 minutes, we were walking down the canal bank to some houses near Blackfriars Bridge, and a lot of the troops were already there, being relieved, and I just dust down and went to sleep.
Could you describe your actual feelings whilst you were taking part in this attack on the German machine gun post?
I mean, just before we started it, really. Yeah. Well, it was a thing, once again, that had to be done, and we didn't know who we knew we were going to meet some German resistance or German line, but we'd been so well trained that we knew that when the officer shouted, "Come on, give them hell," and so on, that we'd just do it. And I think we're really, you see, the barrage started with a terrific clatter of guns and flashes from behind, and you know, all the shells screamed over our heads onto where the German posts were, and then suddenly stopped. And he said, "Come on, lads, give them hell." And we just got up, and we were as if we were on a bayonet drill, and rushed forward into the darkness, and suddenly we were upon a German machine gun post.
Did you shout anything as you were rushing?
Oh, we shouted, "Ah, come on, you bastards," you see. And directly upon them, he had his hands on this big Maxim machine, and just as he was going around, he suddenly threw up his hands, as did the three or four others with him, in this little sort of slit trench, and shouted, "Mercy, Cameron, mercy." And the funny part, they screamed just like sort of awful screams, blood-curdling screams, because they thought we were going to kill them all. But we didn't, and they said, "Mercy, Cameron, mercy." And we prodded them with our bayonets that were below us in this ground, and then fished them all out, and the corporal took them over, and there were other prisoners being taken by the other, and some of the Germans apparently gone to sleep in this, all this straw bales, etc., outside this little farmhouse. And they came up with straw all over them like scarecrows, with their hands up, shouting, "Mercy, Cameron."
Were you given any special instructions on what to do with prisoners if you caught them?
No, but it just seemed to happen. There was always an NCO there that took the... Probably the NCOs were being given to them. There were, I don't know how many there were of them, 15 or 20 in our little part. And they just said, "Oh, take them down the line as prisoners." And even then, some of our chaps were offering them cigarettes and calling them Jerry.
Yeah, so how did you feel towards them? Were you at all sort of curious or angry?
Very curious, because, you see, the German had been an unknown person somehow. We'd read about them in Trenton. Someone had been firing those machine guns. Someone had been fouling the trench mortars, but we saw nothing. It was just this sort of horde that we imagined. And then we we suddenly looked at it and thought, well, these are the ones with their cold scuttle helmets. These are the ones with our enemy that we've just met now.
Did you have a chance to say anything to any of them?
No. I don't suppose they could speak. Some of them, well, might have spoken English, but we didn't speak to them at all.
To return to what you were talking about after the action, you said that you marched down to Blackfriars Bridge and
then a few scattered houses by the canal, and when we got there, found there were quite a lot of our troops were already back there and asleep in the straw. We trod over all these bundles and then just got in a little space, and we heard rumours that some of the Prussian guards had been captured, but these were just fantasies, I think. And I just got to lay down on the floor and went to sleep.
The following day, what
woke up, clean up, and then I was all surprised. There were double doors in this barn where I'd been sleeping, and through a crack in the doors, I was surprised to see I saw the backs of two men sitting down. And they were with a Maxim machine gun. So I said to the corporal, I said, what are they doing back here? He said, oh, I said, that's a long-range machine gun. He said, every few minutes they fire a spray of bullets and it goes right over the heads of all our people in the line and down onto the German tracks and roads.
Could you tell me if the Germans made any significant advances in that action?
No, they didn't. I think it was very fortunate that the 4th Division and also, incidentally, the King's Own had stopped them within, I should think, about a quarter of a mile, because they only reached the canal and never got over it. But I'm only speaking now of when we were in the line, because since April the 9th, I think they had advanced. Oh, a long way, right from Merville and Estrum, probably 10 miles or more. They're a big advance. But it was just when they reached the 4th Division on April the 18th that they were finally stopped and never got any further during the war.
And had your battalion suffered many casualties as a result of this action that you'd been involved in?
A lot, but I wasn't aware at the time, and I know that quite a lot of the young chaps that had gone out with me and had been in the hut at Oswestry Street. Quite a lot of them were missing. I never saw again.
Was there
but any? I think I learnt later that they're probably prisoners and killed, etc., and wounded. They're probably at 200 or 300.
Was there any effort made to regroup the battalion at that point?
Well, when we went out of when we finally went out of the line back to Sensor Valley, well, we received another draft from England, which made it up pretty well.
Could we now turn to the actual trenches that you were in during your service in the Western Front of this particular sector?
Yes. Well, to start with, of course, there were no trenches at all. The Germans had advanced rapidly, and all the Portuguese had fled. And when they were stopped by, for instance, our battalion, they just dug in these small ditches, etc., where we were. No facilities at all. And they were about probably 20 or 30 or 40 feet apart, and we just called them posts. Well, as the time went by, these posts were gradually joined up, and then finally, well, I won't say finally, but within 2 or 3 months, we had a very good trench line with duck boards, etc., and all the sides were riveted with expanded metal and proper parapets with sandbags on. Machine gun outlets, and especially with the reserve line,